hey against the law listeners. This week, you guys, we've got an ancient celeb packed episode. OMG, we have missed you guys so much, but here we are with a new season of the craziest historical gossip. We bring the receipts, that's right, we'll only tell you about things we know are 100% no cap facts. Fans of the show know that last week we did the top 10 gladiator thirst traps. Check the description down below, and we've got an exclusive on them today. Over to Xenia reporting live from ancient Rome.
Hi, so here I am, arena side, digging the dirt on whether or not gladiators are as sexy as you see them on the big screen.
Guys, if you haven't checked it out yet, you can take our latest quiz where you choose pizza toppings and we'll tell you which ancient Greek celeb secretly has a crush on you. Spoiler alert, I got Alexander the Great. Squee! Speaking of, our correspondent in ancient Greece, Meg, has some hot gossip about A the G, as I like to call him. Hey, Meg, is he actually as great as he seems?
Thank you, Flo. Well, yes, I mean, that is a good question. I think Alexander, whether or not he's great really depends on what we mean when we say great. And I think we can all see that he's a great military leader. We've all seen that in his exploits in Persia, across the world. But we really need to delve into the question of what is great? What does it mean to be great? And I think that, to be honest, with Alexander, goes all the way back to his father, Philip of Macedon.
Wow, cool. Okay, well, I can't wait to hear all about him. Later, we'll hear about Gilgamesh. Original fans will know that we've always shipped Gilgamesh and Enkidu, i.e. Gilgadu, but I want to hear all about his career so far. It feels like he's kind of always been famous, but like, who is the real Gilgamesh? We've got Barney out in ancient Mesopotamia today, spilling the tea about the ancient Near East. Over to you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, Barney. Just give us a quick bit of gossip before we start the show.
Yeah. I'm very excited to be talking about celebrity in the ancient Near East today. Apparently that's a popular topic. So I'm sure everyone's going to be very excited to hear about Daddy Imhotep. Actually, Flo, I don't know if he was a father. But also we've got the Virgin Gilgamesh versus Chad Enkidu. So I think, yes, it's going to be very exciting.
Great, thanks Barney, that was super interesting. Now you've met those guys, it's time to meet me, Flo. I'm not super up to date on ancient celeb gossip, just because all I can think about right now are those gladiator thirst traps. Am I right, girlies? Okay guys, it's time to get the kettle on because we're about to spill that tea on the ancient world. Right, so that's quite enough of that nonsense. Let's get back to our usual schedule for recording. Which is obviously much more serious. So our topic today is celebrities in the ancient world. But first of all, I kind of want to know what celebrity means and also what celebrity means. And by that, I mean, I want a definition of what we think celebrity means. And also, I want to know the origin of the word. So first off, what is a celebrity?
So Robert Garland, who is an academic who researches celebrity in the ancient world, says that celebrity is an amalgam of talent, lifestyle, charisma, and sex appeal. I don't know how we feel about that. Do others think that's accurate for either ancient or modern celebrities?
I think you don't need the sex appeal part to be a celebrity because Willem Dafoe is famous.
I don't know if you've heard the rumours about Mr. Defoe, but...
I have, unfortunately. Everything I've learned about that has been against my will. It's not an image I want in my head. All right, maybe not Willem Dafoe. Who else is a celebrity? Well, Donald Trump's a celebrity.
Yeah. Okay, well, he wasn't in the ancient world.
Yeah, that's true.
I did find a Plutarch quote that says men in public life are responsible for more than their public words and actions. Their dinners, beds, marriages, amusements and interests are all objects of curiosity. So that kind of ties in with the like lifestyle bit of that definition. We're interested in more than what people say, more than what people necessarily do that makes them famous. We're also interested in their private lives as well.
Yeah.
What gives Mila Kunis IBS? Who is Gwyneth Paltrow's pube stylist? Things like that. It's weird though, because if you I don't really keep up with celebrity gossip, I have to say, but when I do, it's like spotted Kim Kardashian wearing sweatpants to Target, and it's a shocking thing that she's wearing comfortable clothing. I will say that I don't think Kim Kardashian's ever actually gone into a Target, but
that's an against the law right there.
That is an against the law. Immediately, straight off the bat.
I think the thing is, like, that's maybe slightly different from Kim K, but the idea of, like, yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow's pube stylist or whatever, I do think that is a key aspect of celebrity, both modern and ancient, is people just doing weird things and us being obsessed with them behaving weirdly. And they're kind of able to behave weirdly because they're rich and famous. But, like, there's a story about Alcibiades, who is definitely a candidate for kind of one of the biggest early celebrities. He's a sort of Athenian general, statesman. He entered his horses into the Olympics. He did tons of stuff that kind of made him famous. But he once bought a really expensive dog, like, as a pet. He spent loads and loads of money, 7,000 drachmas, on a nice dog. And apparently all his friends were like, what are you doing? This is a mad thing to do. And he said, that's just what I want. I want the Athenians to talk about this so they won't say something worse about me.
I've heard that celebrities can call paparazzi on themselves, that they'll call paparazzi, say, I'm going to be here at this time, and I either want to cover for something bad that I did, and I want you to cover me so that I can deflect, or I want to promote my upcoming project. So that whole thing where you say, I want to generate something for the people to talk about is still something that you see today.
Yeah, and I think the politicians do that sometimes as well.
Yeah, and I think that aspect of, like, press talking about it is something that Greg Jenner defines as part of his definition of celebrity, is, like, the relationship between celebrities and mass media. But Meg, your story about Alcibiades, that sounds like actually the same effect was happening without mass media.
Yeah, exactly. A kind of the relationship between, let's say, the celebrity and the people. And he's kind of controlling his public image through, you know, almost like a publicity stunt, buying this really expensive dog. And news does travel fast in the ancient world.
So we've defined what celebrity is. Now, can we look at the definition of celebrity as a word?
Sure. So it comes from the Latin celebere, meaning busy, populous, or well-attended. So again, it's like this relationship between the celebrity and attention from other people.
Oh, I love that. Right, we've got the definition of the word celebrity. Do we have any other etymology fun hour things to add here before I move on?
I don't have etymology specifically, but I do have, like, some different words for sort of fame or glory or celebrity in ancient Greek, if you would like to hear them. Actually, one of them is a fun etymology. One of them is fun.
Go for it.
Kudos. Kudos to you guys. Would you like some kudos?
Thanks.
No worries, guys. That is the ancient Greek word for sort of renown or glory, or I think specifically it's a kind of, if you get renown or glory from the gods, that's kudos. And obviously we use that word, which is great.
Meg, are you implying that you're a god by giving us kudos there?
Yeah, that was a subtle demonstration of the dynamic of power here.
Absolutely.
We've also got kleos, which is a word that is used a lot in Homer. And again, it means kind of fame or glory, but also like rumour or sort of good report. So I think that kind of links back to, like, what Xenia was saying about celebrity is basically sort of in the eye of the masses, right? It's we decide who is a celebrity. And I think the fact that kleos is also like rumor and reports that suggests that glory is based on what people are saying about you. And kleos is like the glory that, you know, you die for it. So some of the characters in the Iliad are like, I want to die in battle so that I get my eternal kleos.
Oh, I quite like that, because sometimes I like to play with that theory a little bit about what people are saying about you. And if I meet someone in life who isn't a very nice person, to just rile them up a little bit by saying something like, I don't care what people say about you, I like you. Which I think is quite a powerful way to really upset somebody who thinks highly of themselves.
Somebody once said to me, I've heard bad things about your haircut, Barney, but I quite like it.
Oh my God!
Whoa. That was broken.
That's so horrible. Was it a bad haircut?
No.
not that you knew of.
Yeah.
I don't know how you play that off. Just be like, ah, oh, well, thanks. Who said that about my hair? What? Who said that? Why are there discussions being held about my hair?
Celebrity, that's why.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so when I think about celebrity nowadays, celebrity as a profession is quite a vague thing to say, because you can, of course, nowadays be famous for doing actually very little. But I think of celebrities nowadays as actors, performers, so like singers or sports personalities, TV hosts, things like that. I know that we didn't have ancient TV hosts. I'm not that dumb. I know that we've talked about actors before. Did we have like famous actors, famous sports people like we do now, like Mo Farah or Benedict Cumberbatch or Timmy Mallett or like...
Yeah, for sure. In Roman times, definitely. We've got actors. We've got lots of sports personalities, actually. Gladiators, charioteers. Those are the main big celebs.
Could you give me any celebrities that I could maybe develop an unhealthy crush on?
Sure. Would you like to start with the actor, the gladiator, or the charioteer?
Oh, I love this game.
Yeah. I'm going to go with actors, just because I'm not a sporty person and I feel like crushing on an actor is definitely, it's way more achievable than if I had a crush on someone who is super fit, because they might want to engage in exercise if we were dating. I am married, but, you know, I'm still holding out hope for Matthew Bainton.
Oh, aren't we all?
Cool. So there was a really famous actor in ancient Rome. He was called Roscius, Quintus Roscius Gallus was his full name. Now, the interesting thing about actually most celebrities in the ancient world was, or rather in the Roman world, was that they were usually very low class. So usually slaves or freedmen, actually. And this is true of, we all think of gladiators as maybe slaves or freedmen because of the film Gladiator. But actually, this is also true of actors. Now, Quintus Roscius Gallus actually wasn't a slave. He was probably a freedman. So he was still fairly low class, but he wasn't enslaved. And the interesting thing about acting in ancient Rome, particularly in the period that he lived, he was in the first century BC. So he was around the same time as one of the first dictators in ancient Rome, a guy called Sulla, and also Cicero, the famous orator and politician. So the thing about actors then was sometimes dictators and politicians would use actors to kind of project their message onto the public stage, a little bit like, actors being featured in political campaigns or adverts maybe now. So he would go on stage and he would kind of be hired by wealthy politicians to like perform in plays or to perform in specific plays that would then pass their message on to a much broader audience.
I remember that from the most recent US election, where of course Joe Biden was the victor, I remember people like Lizzo and The Rock were endorsing Joe Biden, and you know, quite publicly on Twitter, celebrities were stating their political allegiance.
Is the Roman situation comparable to maybe like Jennifer Lopez, who performed at Biden's inauguration?
Yeah, she wasn't delivering a specific message, but yeah, say for example, if like, so Biden would have paid for that, right? He would have paid her fee, or the inauguration committee would have paid for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
That's kind of similar. Yeah. Someone would have sponsored the actor and would have made it very clear as well that they had sponsored the actor. So in a way, like the politician was capitalizing on the actor's popularity separately. If people would come to see the actor, they wouldn't necessarily come in such droves to see a politician. But by coming to see the actor, then they were like, sponsored by Cicero. Interesting. Okay.
So the politician gets the kudos.
Yeah.
For playing the actor.
Well.
Very nice.
I was just going to say, let's also not forget that she is still Jenny from the block. So just like the actors in ancient Rome being from humble origins.
Very true.
Very good parallel. That's my latest essay title, I think.
But what I want to know about Roscius, because obviously I'm permanently playing a game of Smash or Pass in my head. do we smash mosquitoes?
I'm going to look up a photo. Just said I'm going to look up a photo as if there were cameras then.
Xenia, can you paint us a photo with your words?
So, let's see. Oh, actually, here we go. There were some nasty rumours about his appearance. Some people said that he introduced the Greek style of acting with masks in Rome in order to hide his squint.
Smash.
However, a poet called Catullus says he says he surpasses deities in his gorgeousness.
So he's actually Squintus Roscius Gallus.
Tabloid flow.
They'd be all over that. Is he then mask fishing? Have you heard this term?
What?
No.
So you know, like the masks, you know, COVID masks.
Oh.
People talk about like mask fishing, which is basically when you put your mask on, you're really hot, like your face looks great, and everyone's like, wow, what a beautiful person. And then you take your mask off and you're like, actually, I'm horrible. I don't think it's a bit of a horrible term, but it sounds like that guy was doing it.
When I wear a mask, I look like a pumpkin that's been dropped on a sanitary towel.
Oh my God, what an image. When I asked to be painted a picture with words, that is not...
Sorry about that. My bad. I've decided not to crush on Roscius. No offence.
Yeah, pass. Pass.
Yeah, absolutely pass. Right, so we've got a pass on Roscius. Sorry, Roscius. No offence. But I'm imagining the oil-covered, sexy, six-packed gladiators, as we all know and love from TV and films.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've got to be hot. They've got to be... You've got to have a crush on them, right?
Well... Now, lots of women in ancient Rome did have crushes on gladiators, women and men, actually. So we've got quite a lot of poems talking about gladiators and charioteers as well. Men seem to find charioteers hotter, interestingly. But we do have quite a... I'm going to go against the law on gladiators being as hot as Russell Crowe. Because Juvenal, the poet, in his satires... He addresses one of his poems to a woman called Eppia, and he says, what were these youthful charms that captivated Eppia? What did she see to allow herself to be called gladiator fodder? Now, this means that she paid for sex with a gladiator. And then he goes on to describe this gladiator. A wounded arm gave promise of a discharge. There were various deformities in his face, a scar caused by the helmet, a huge boil on his nose, a nasty septic dribble always trickling from his eye. But he was a gladiator. It is this that transforms these fellows into the most beautiful youths imaginable.
The female gaze. That's, honestly, that's quite disturbing. Like, he sounds quite moist. In general, there's dribbling and trickling happening.
Moist, but yeah. In general. It's a horrible way to describe someone. Just broadly moist.
It's just not, yeah. Actually, that might be a pass for me as well. I don't know if I want to be gladiator fodder.
But I think that is really interesting in terms of that question of, like, do we just sort of fancy celebrities because they're famous?
Joanna Lumley said something really interesting about that. I think it was an interview a few years ago, but one of her interviewers said, you know, oh, but you're this model, you're so beautiful. I think it might have been Graham Norton. And she was like, no, I'm only beautiful because everyone says I am. If I were working in a bakery, no one would look twice at me. And I thought that was really interesting because I do think she's really beautiful and really elegant. But she did draw attention to, like, when you keep repeating this person is beautiful, maybe you do start believing or even changing your perception of beauty.
Joanna Lumley underestimates how much I love gluten, because I think I'd probably get a crush on her if she worked in a bakery. But there was a meme going around a while back, a picture of Justin Bieber in, like, a cap, and someone had commented underneath it saying, like, look at this man, he's the most gorgeous human being alive, or something. And the comment directly underneath that was like, you can literally go to your nearest gas station and find 20 blokes that look like this. Like, stop it. He just looks like a guy. And it's true. If you look at a lot of celebrities, they just look like people. But, like, I don't think George Clooney's very attractive. Brad Pitt looks like a Neanderthal to me. I don't get it. But they have one sexiest man alive for the last, it seems like, 5,000 years.
Yeah, don't worry, Matt Bainton's time is coming for sexiest man
alive. It is. Sexy nerds.
The recipient of that award 5,001 years ago was, in fact, Gilgamesh, though, so...
Smash.
Immediately smash. Immediately smash. Sorry, what's the game?
Susie.
Right, okay. Controversial. Gilgamesh. Anger issues. Yeah. That can be kind of attractive. Bad boy, whatever. Or Enkidu. Kind of a little bit wild. I'm thinking of... I'll be honest. When I think of Enkidu, I kind of think of Brendan Fraser... in the George of the Jungle film.
Nice.
So I'm actually probably team Enkidu here.
Okay, in the love triangle, like in Twilight.
Why not both?
Yes.
I had to think a little bit laterally about celebrity in the ancient Near East, or whether or not it's even appropriate to say something like that about the ancient Near East, because we sort of lack so many like popular sources, and so it's kind of hard to know exactly what people might have thought about certain prominent figures in society, which, you know, predictably are often kings or epic characters. But I guess you do see people's fame kind of causing them to reoccur throughout time periods, right? So Gilgamesh, for example, is a pseudo-historical king and may have existed at some point in, you know, very early Mesopotamian history. And obviously becomes this sort of culture hero and the star of this epic cycle, basically. And so I guess maybe not a celebrity in the sense that we think, but certainly a recognisable figure from that society, both at the time and today. What's interesting, though, is that the scribe who wrote the standard version of the Epic of Gilgamesh, who's called Sin-Leki-Unini, for years after he wrote that down, which was in the sort of late second millennium, maybe like 1200 BC sort of time, generations later, in Hellenistic Babylon, so like when post-Alexander the Great sort of times, a family of scribes are still claiming to be related to him. And so again, you've got this kind of like, this desire to be associated with a famous individual because of his achievements. And so it's sort of, yeah, there's this kind of like almost cult feeling to it that all these scribes later on were saying, I am related to the great author of the Epic of Gilgamesh. I guess, are they fans? Are they writing fan fiction when they do their own scribing?
You get that with Homer as well. You get kind of the descendants or the people as sort of followers of Homer, like centuries later, being like, oh, you know, I'm related, or I'm working in his tradition. Which again is so interesting because, you know, he is composing poetry about the sort of famous men of old, but then himself becomes a famous man of old.
I mean, maybe we should be talking about like the children of famous people here and how they sort of, yeah, you know, your sort of Brooklyn Beckhams.
Yeah. Nepotism.
So we've got Gilgamesh, who might be considered a celebrity, certainly probably is now. When I think of the ancient Near East, though, I've got Brendan Fraser on my mind now. Because I love The Mummy, whether or not it's factually accurate and you can actually raise the dead. But in The Mummy, controversial opinion, Imhotep, really hot. I don't normally like the whole Hulk look, but the actor who plays Imhotep, smash.
Do you like him when he's belching up insects or as a sandstorm?
Honestly, it's when all the sand starts to attack. That's definitely when I realised that I had feelings.
It's interesting that you bring up Imhotep, though, because Imhotep was a real Egyptian of very distinct and different characterization to the villain of The Mummy. And I've never really known why they kind of fixated on him necessarily. I guess it's a very Egyptian sounding name, which probably helps, but like Imhotep was the baddie in the 1930s version of The Mummy. The real Imhotep was a vizier in the Egyptian Old Kingdom and architect, allegedly, who designed the first pyramid. And he was the vizier to King Djoser, one of the earliest pharaohs. And the step pyramid at Saqqara, which doesn't have the same shape as the Great Pyramids of Giza, but it looks like a sort of a cake basically, like a lots of little cakes stacked on top of each other. And that's how he allegedly came up with the idea for the pyramid, is they took the standard form of the tomb at the time, which was a flat bench shape called a mastaba, and he stacked smaller and smaller ones on top of each other until it made a point.
I thought you were going to say that's how he got the idea. He was just having a really great cake and then was like, do you know what? This would be fantastic.
In a way, there's a sort of a cult of celebrity around the historical Imhotep as well, because although he was around in the 3rd millennium BC, so very ancient history, by Egypt's late period and into when the Greeks and Romans were getting involved, he developed a cult, his own cult, thousands of years after he died, in which he was renowned as a god of healing. And pilgrims came from far and wide to visit his temples at Saqqara as well, and to be healed and dedicate animal mummies to him, baboons and ibises and stuff like that. And so somehow, thousands of years after Imhotep, the vizier and maybe architect, had died, he then gained this reputation and this cult following, celebrity style, as a god of healing. And he was deified, which is incredibly rare for a non-royal mortal to be deified in Egyptian history. And the Greeks also identified him with Asclepius.
Oh, fantastic. I love that for him.
He sort of became a celebrity after his death. And that's a true kind of popular reflection, because this was a popular cult.
I was going to say, the mummy, hearing about Anaxinamun gave my childhood brain a sudden moment of, holy shit, wait a minute, because the name Anaxinamun or Anxinamun is three separate words. And I was like, is that the same for Tutankhamun? Because we just say Tutankhamun as one word, and Anaxinamun as three. And it turns out Tutankhamun is Tutankhamun.
Yeah.
And that, I remember my childhood brain going, oh, linguistics, man. Or like, just being freaked out by it.
There's a good little factoid about Tutankhamun that helps you realise that, you know, Egyptian names, as Akkadian names in Babylonia and Assyria, are often sentences. Is that when Tutankhamun was born, his name was Tutankhaten rather than Tutankhamun. So the god, the popular god at the time that his dad was putting forward, was Aten, the sun disk. And Tutankhamun, after his father Akhenaten died, reverted Egyptian religion back to having Amun at the top. So he went from being Tutankhaten, the living image of Aten, to Tutankhamun, living image of Amun.
Tutankhamun is another person who's become more famous after his death, right?
Yes, great point. And, you know, as a lot of people like to say, like, exceeding his reputation in life as a relatively short-lived king. I don't think there's any point to, like, do down his kind of achievements. And he didn't really have many achievements, but, like, he wasn't a bad pharaoh. He's just an unremarkable pharaoh.
You're like, I don't want to do down his achievements, although he had none.
He's already dead. I was thinking about that, though, on this topic of celebrity, like, especially because sources for kind of popular reception of prominent figures in the ancient Near East are a little thin on the ground, as far as I can tell. But people who, yeah, have become famous. I always think the recipient of the complaint tablet, Ea Natsir, is unjustifiably famous. That a lot of people, I think especially Reddit is to blame for this, know as like the first complaint letter in history about the bad shipment of copper. A lot of people seem to be able to name drop Ea Natsir on the internet, but he's just some bloke who happened to be recorded on one of thousands of tablets about trading copper in the ancient Near East.
Imagine like one of your Yelp reviews goes viral and like thousands of years after your death they're like, oh my god, that Barney guy was so annoying.
No, I think that's exactly right. Like, these things were so normal, and yet there's just this one tablet that everyone's like, oh, it's the first complaint letter from, you know, from ancient history. I guess it just shows how these narratives can be kind of selected and woven.
So Imhotep was just some guy, really. He wasn't a celebrity in his own time. He wasn't a great leader or anything like that. But I'm thinking now about the very weird obsession that's kind of misplaced, wrong time for it. People are getting very thirsty for Volodymyr Zelensky, the leader of Ukraine, who are currently in a conflict with Russia, which seems like a very unusual decision to focus in on how attractive or unattractive a leader is, but I know that we've got someone amongst us who has a very large and possibly inappropriate crush on Hadrian, not naming any names, Enya, but but was there any kind of sort of cult of celebrity around ancient leaders at the time? I know that now we do. We've almost like sexified ancient leaders. But at the time, was there any kind of celeb worship for leaders?
There was definitely was in ancient Greece, obviously. A the G, Alexander the Great, big, big leader. He was like really famous in the ancient world and definitely had sort of followers. And what's really interesting about Alexander the Great is I think he, I was reading some sort of scholarship about him. And basically the sort of consensus seems to be that he wanted to be famous. He knew it would help him in his mission to, you know, conquer the world. And but he also wanted the sort of fame in posterity. He wanted to be known afterwards. And he kind of curated his own fame. And he had like a historian who was called Callisthenes, who sort of accompanied him and was the official historian. Callisthenes was also the nephew of Aristotle. It's just a fun fact about him. And one of the articles I was reading about their relationship said that Callisthenes was history's first official PR man. So he sort of curated Alexander's reputation and did, he like worked out things, like he said it was 1,000 years between the Trojan War and Alexander's campaign against Persia. It was like, to the day, it's been 1,000 years, and sort of like created this fame and this almost sort of supernatural attachment to him, which I think is really interesting. So he was definitely an early celebrity, but also not only in the sense that he was very well known, but also in that he kind of wanted to be, which is cool.
I absolutely love the idea of an ancient PR agency.
I know, it's great, isn't it?
I was just going to say, I'm thinking of Callisthenes as like his sort of videographer to Alexander's influencer.
Yes.
Tagging along.
Yeah, exactly.
So for favourite things, I think this episode, I'm going to start, Barney, with you.
Okay, I will have Roscius's mask fishing as my favourite thing. I like the idea, although as Xenia said, the sources about his beauty are contradictory. The idea of reviving Greek mask wearing in theatre to hide the looks of your face. I like it. I respect it. Good diva moment for Roscius there. So that's my favourite thing. Thank you, Xenia.
Xenia, I'm going to ping over to you, even though Meg was the one who pointed out mask fishing. But Xenia, I'm going to ping over to you as you provided the Roscius fact. What's your favourite thing to have learned today?
I think my favourite thing to learn was about celebrities who've become celebrities after their time, like Imhotep and Tutankhamun. I think there's hope for us all still.
It makes me wonder what I'd be famous for in the future, whether it be a bad Yelp review or whether it's because I'm just a renowned artist and respected after my death, but not quite recognised during my time here. Anyway, sorry. Meg, your favourite thing that you've learned from today?
My favourite thing was, it was quite a small fact, but I just thought it was really interesting, was Barney's point about how even the scribes of Gilgamesh became famous and their descendants sort of claimed to be descended from the scribes who originally scribed it. That was not correct.
it's a bit like Louis Theroux being famous in his own right as someone who documents interesting people.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that's really cool, the idea of sort of famous, yeah, the descendants. And again, interesting that link to sort of nepotism and like we now have like big acting families. Yeah, love that.
I've really enjoyed this episode playing a really like a misplaced game of smash or pass with people that we have no idea what they look like really, except for Squintus Roscius Gallus, who was Squinty Quintus, as I like to call him. Just reducing it down to the most basic celebrity gossip that we possibly could, and I'll say that this episode has been an absolute smash. Would definitely smash. I've really enjoyed this episode, and I'm really excited to be joined by everybody for our next episode, which is going to be all about hair. We won't be touching on Gwyneth Paltrow's pubes stylist, unfortunately. We've got lots of fun and interesting facts about ancient hair. So stay tuned, support us on Patreon, and we'll catch you next time.